Have you ever gazed up at the night sky and wondered if we're truly alone in this vast universe? From ancient folklore to modern day sightings, the idea of extraterrestrial life has captivated our imaginations for centuries. Today we're going to explore the fascinating world of alien encounters, the stories that make us question the boundaries of our reality, and the possibilities that lie beyond our cosmic backyard. Happiest day, beautiful soul. Welcome back to The Medium Matters, the podcast where we're all mini mystics learning about the paranormal, the supernatural, and all the things together. And everyone shimmers. I'm your host, Chantel, and today we're talking alien encounters. So grab your foil hat and your water cups, and let's talk about some peculiar events, shall we? When we think of aliens, our minds often conjure up images of little green men with big heads and almond-shaped eyes. But in reality, the concept of extraterrestrial life encompasses a really big array of possibilities. Aliens could be microscopic organisms, intelligent beings, or even advanced civilizations far beyond our comprehension. The only certainty is that they would be life forms that originated from a planet or celestial body other than Earth. With billions of galaxies in the observable universe, each containing countless stars and planets, the potential for alien life to exist elsewhere is pretty staggering. Some scientists believe that life could have arisen on planets orbiting distant stars, while others speculate that aliens might originate from entirely different dimensions or realms of existence. The truth is, we just don't know. But that's what makes the search for extraterrestrial life so exciting. So we're going to talk about some of the better known encounters, and we're going to start by taking a little trip back to the summer of 1947, a time when America was just beginning to grapple with the concept of UFOs. The Kenneth Arnold incident is often considered the spark that ignited the modern UFO craze. So picture this. It's June 24th, 1947. A sunny afternoon in the Pacific Northwest, and our story unfolds in the clear blue skies over the Cascade Mountains in Washington State. Kenneth Arnold, a 32-year-old businessman and experienced pilot, was flying his small plane on a routine business trip from Chehalis, Washington to Yakima. Arnold was also a member of the Air Search and Rescue Mercy Flyers, which made him particularly observant of the skies. On this fateful day, he decided to take a detour to look for a downed C-46 transport plane that had crashed near Mount Rainier, hoping to earn a $5,000 reward. As Arnold flew past Mount Rainier, something caught his eye. A bright flash, like sunlight reflecting off a mirror. Startled, he looked around and spotted 9 peculiar objects flying in a formation. These objects were unlike anything he had ever seen. Shaped like boomerangs or crescent moons, they moved at incredible speeds, darting and weaving in a way that no known aircraft could. Arnold estimated that they were traveling at a minimum of 1,200 miles per hour, faster than any known aircraft at the time. He watched in amazement as the objects flew from Mount Rainier to Mount Adams, a distance of about 50 miles in just under 2 minutes. Once safely on the ground, Arnold was eager to share his experience. He landed in Yakima, rushed to the local newspaper, and recounted his entire encounter. The reporter, sensing a sensational story, pressed for details. Arnold described the objects as saucer-like, and this description quickly morphed into the term flying saucers in the media, forever embedding the phrase into the public consciousness. The news spread like wildfire, capturing the imagination of a nation already on edge from post-war tensions and the beginning of the Cold War. Newspapers across the country ran headlines about Arnold's sighting, and soon, reports of similar sightings began to pour in from various parts of the country. Authorities, including the military, took Arnold's report very seriously. They conducted interviews and investigations, but just couldn't come up with a definitive explanation. Some suggested that Arnold had seen reflections of snow on the mountains, or even a flock of birds. But Arnold, a seasoned pilot, dismissed these theories outright. He was adamant about what he saw and stuck to his story despite the skepticism and ridicule. Arnold's sightings had a profound impact, not just on him, but on the entire world. It marked the beginning of the modern UFO era and led to an explosion of UFO reports. People were now looking to the skies with a mix of fear and wonder, and the idea that we might not be alone in the universe began to take root in the public psyche. Interestingly, Arnold himself never claimed the objects were extraterrestrial. He simply reported what he saw: 9 mysterious, high-speed objects flying in a way that defied conventional explanation. His clear, consistent account and reputation for honesty lent significant credibility to the incident. In the years that followed, Arnold remained a prominent figure in the UFO community. He wrote books, gave interviews, and never wavered from his original account. His sighting has been thoroughly examined and remains one of the most credible UFO encounters due to the clear conditions of the sighting, Arnold's reliability, and the detailed descriptions he provided. So what did Kenneth Arnold really see that day? Advanced military aircraft? Atmospheric phenomena? Or something far more mysterious? While we may never know the truth, the Kenneth Arnold incident opened our eyes to the possibilities that lie beyond our skies, inspiring generations to keep looking up and wondering what might be out there. Our next story begins in the early hours of December 26, 1980, in Rendlesham, Suffolk, England. The personnel stationed at the twin bases of RAF Bentwaters and RAF Woodbridge, both used by the US Air Force, were enjoying a typical night when suddenly chaos broke out. A security patrol near the east gate of RAF Woodbridge noticed strange pulsating lights descending into the forest. Curious and a bit apprehensive, a few servicemen, including John Burroughs and Jim Peniston, ventured into the woods to investigate. What they encountered was beyond anything they could have imagined. In the clearing, they saw a glowing metallic object. This wasn't just a light, it was a craft, unlike anything they had ever seen. Descriptions vary, but the general consensus was a triangular-shaped object about 3 meters across with bright, colorful lights moving around it. Jim Peniston, in a particularly brave move, approached the craft. He later recounted that the surface was smooth, covered in strange symbols reminiscent of hieroglyphics. He even touched it and felt a static charge in the air. Then, after a short period, the object suddenly rose above the trees and disappeared at incredible speed. The encounter left the men stunned. They returned to the base, filed a report, and tried to go about their duties, but the experience had shaken them so deeply. The following day, so December 27th, Deputy Base Commander Lieutenant Colonel Charles Halt was briefed on the incident. Skeptical but curious, he decided to investigate for himself. Armed with a team, Geiger counters, and audio recording equipment, Halt ventured into Rendlesham Forest. The team discovered unusual radiation readings in the area where the craft had been spotted. Then, as they explored further, they saw strange lights again. Halt's audio recording, which is now famous, captures his real-time observations of these lights darting around the forest and appearing to beam down a stream of light from above. Here he comes from the south. He's coming toward us now. Now we're observing what appears to be a beam coming down to the ground. This is unreal. Over the next few hours, Halt and his team witnessed the lights move in patterns that defied conventional explanation. By the time they returned to the base, they were convinced something extraordinary had occurred, something that could not be easily explained away. The official reports filed by Halt and the servicemen involved were detailed and thorough. Despite this, the Ministry of Defense and other government bodies maintained that the incident posed no threat to national security and thus warranted no further investigation. In the years following the incident, multiple theories and explanations have surfaced. Some skeptics suggest the lights were caused by the nearby lighthouse, natural phenomenon, or even a secret military experiment. However, those who were there, like Burroughs and Peniston, remained steadfast in their belief that they encountered something not of this world. The Rendlesham Forest incident continues to captivate UFO enthusiasts and researchers. It stands out due to the credibility of the witnesses, trained military personnel, and the physical evidence documented at the scene, such as the indentations in the ground and the elevated radiation levels. So what really happened in Rendlesham Forest? Was it a genuine UFO encounter? A case of mistaken identity? Or something else entirely? The truth remains elusive, tucked away in the shadows of those ancient trees, whispering secrets to those who dare to listen. It was a warm March evening in 1997 when something utterly bizarre and unexplained unfolded across the Arizona skies. The desert sky is clear, the stars are twinkling, and thousands of people are about to witness something extraordinary. It all begins around 7:30 p.m. when people in the town of Henderson, Nevada start noticing strange V-shaped lights in the sky. These lights are silent and moving slowly, heading southeast. As the minutes tick by, the lights pass over Prescott, Arizona, and the calls to local radio stations and news outlets start coming in. Witnesses describe a massive boomerang-shaped craft with five distinct lights on its leading edge, gliding silently across the sky. By 8 p.m., the lights reach the Phoenix area, and this is where things get really interesting. Thousands of people, including families, police officers, and even the governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, witnessed the phenomenon. The lights form a triangular pattern with one light at the front and others trailing behind. The craft is so large that some describe it as blocking out the stars as it passes overhead. People are in awe. Some are scared, others are curious, but everyone is captivated. Witnesses report that the lights move with a kind of eerie, otherworldly precision. There's no sound, no rush of air, just an immense silent object floating above them. One witness likens the experience to seeing a giant flying carpenter square moving through the sky. By 10 p.m., the lights continue their journey southeast, eventually fading out of sight near the Tucson area. But the impact of what people saw remains. Local news stations are flooded with calls, and the story quickly gains national attention. The sheer number of witnesses and the clarity of their descriptions make it difficult to dismiss this as a mere hoax or misidentification. The following day, the incident sees a flurry of activity. The military initially claims that the lights were flares dropped by an A-10 Warthog aircraft during a training exercise at the Barry Goldwater Range. However, many witnesses are skeptical of this explanation. They argue that flares wouldn't form a solid V-shaped formation or move in the manner the lights did. Governor Fife Symington holds a press conference, adding a twist to the story. During his conference, he brings out a staffer dressed in an alien costume, attempting to inject some humor into the situation. But years later, Symington reveals in an interview that he himself saw the lights and believed they were otherworldly, describing the craft as enormous and inexplicable. Investigations by UFO researchers and independent groups uncover more intriguing details. They find that the lights were visible across a distance of over 300 miles, from the Nevada state line all the way to the edge of Tucson. Some theories suggest the craft could have been a top-secret military project, but no concrete evidence has ever surfaced to support this. As the years pass, the Phoenix lights continue to be a topic of fascination and debate. Documentaries, books, and countless articles explore the incident, presenting theories ranging from extraterrestrial visitors to advanced human technology. The lack of a definitive explanation only adds to the mystery. So, what really happened in the skies over Phoenix at night? Were those lights a glimpse into advanced military technology, a visit from extraterrestrial beings, or something else entirely? The Phoenix lights remain an enigma, a reminder that our world still holds secrets and wonders that defy easy explanation. It's the morning of September 16th, 1994, in Rua, Zimbabwe, a tranquil, rural area surrounded by picturesque landscapes and the serene African wilderness. The Ariel School, a private institution, is buzzing with the energy of nearly 60 students, ages 6 to 12. The children are out in the playground, enjoying their mid-morning break under the watchful eyes of the teachers. Suddenly, an unusual silence falls over the playground as the kids notice something extraordinary. A group of students points towards the edge of the school property, near a line of trees that borders the playground. Hovering just above the ground are several strange, shiny objects. Descriptions vary, but most children report seeing at least one disc-shaped craft, metallic and gleaming in the bright sunlight. The craft seems to shimmer as it hovers, exuding an otherworldly aura. As the kids watch in stunned silence, figures begin to emerge from the craft. These beings are unlike anything they've seen before. Small, roughly 3 to 4 feet tall, with large almond-shaped eyes and thin, spindly bodies. They move with an unusual grace, almost as if they're gliding rather than walking. The kids describe the beings as having large heads and eyes that seem to convey deep, unsettling intelligence. The most chilling part? Some of the kids report experiencing a form of telepathic communication. They say the beings conveyed messages about the environment, warning of ecological disasters, and the dangers of technology. The beings' eyes, the children recall, seem to transmit these thoughts directly into their minds. Panicked and fascinated, the kids run to alert their teachers, but by the time the adults arrive, the craft and beings have vanished, leaving behind only confusion and fear. The kids are gathered together, and their teachers immediately notice their genuine distress. They listen as the kids, one after another, recount remarkably similar stories of what they just witnessed. News of the encounter spreads quickly, reaching local media and eventually attracting the attention of Cynthia Hind, a well-respected South African UFO researcher. Hind interviews the children and is struck by their consistency and sincerity. These are not the ramblings of overactive imaginations. Each child provides a detailed, coherent account of the same event despite being interviewed separately. Hind brings in Harvard psychiatrist Dr. John Mack, an expert in alien abduction phenomena, to further investigate. Dr. Mack conducts his own interviews and is equally impressed by the children's testimonies. He notes their earnestness and the emotional impact the encounter has had on each of them. The children's drawings of the craft and beings are strikingly similar, adding another layer of credibility to their stories. The aerial school encounter stands out in the annals of UFO history, not just for the number of witnesses, but for their age and the detailed nature of their reports. Over time, the story of what happened that day has been examined, analyzed, and debated. Skeptics propose mass hysteria and a shared delusion, while others argue that the consistency and clarity of the kids' accounts point to something much more profound and unexplainable. Years later, many of those children, now adults, still stand by their experiences, insisting that what they saw was real and not a figment of their imagination. Their unwavering conviction continues to fuel discussions and investigations into the possibility of extraterrestrial life and the implications of such encounters. It was a warm May morning in 1967 when prospector Stephen Michalak headed out into the wilderness near Falcon Lake, Manitoba, in search of precious minerals. Little did the amateur geologist know, he was about to have an encounter that would forever change his life and become one of the most famous and well-documented UFO cases in Canadian history. Michalak spent the day hiking and examining quartz veins in the rocky Canadian Shield terrain of Whiteshell Provincial Park, an area he had staked claims in before. It was around 12:30 p.m. when the first hint of something strange occurred. Michalak heard a commotion of geese squawking loudly, clearly agitated by something. He looked up to see two glowing, cigar-shaped objects hovering silently around 150 feet away. At first, the seasoned outdoorsman thought maybe it was some kind of aircraft or missiles. But the objects made no sound and seemed to defy conventional flight. One of the craft appeared to land on a flat rock near Michalak, while the other simply flew off into the distance. With his curiosity piqued, Michalak approached the saucer-like object that had landed only 60 yards away. He noticed it was around 35 feet across and 10 feet high, with a curved exterior that looked like oxidized stainless steel or aluminum. The surface seemed seamless with no rivets, portholes, or any visible markings. For about half an hour, Michalak carefully examined and sketched the mysterious craft. Then the unthinkable happened. A door or hatch of some sort opened with a whooshing sound, and exhaust gases began spewing out, nearly knocking Michalak off his feet. Suddenly, the prospector was struck by a searing hot blast of air or gas that left agonizing burn marks across his upper body. Michalak frantically ripped off his smoldering shirt and cap as the craft began spinning rapidly before shooting straight up into the sky, disappearing in an instant. Dazed and nauseous, he stumbled back towards the highway, his stomach churning and head pounding. When he finally made it to a motel, Michalak was horrified to see the extent of the grid-like burn pattern across his torso and stomach. Over the next few days, Michalak's condition only worsened with intense nausea, cold sweats, and severe weight loss. His suntan vividly recalls the putrid, sulfuric odor emanating from the oozing burn marks. Doctors were baffled, unable to determine the cause of the bizarre injuries and radioactive contamination on Michalak's body and belongings. For over 50 years, the Falcon Lake incident has been intensely scrutinized by government agencies, the military, and UFO researchers. Soil samples and physical evidence like Michalak's melted cap and jacket were found to be highly radioactive. The land itself showed signs of intense heat, with shards of melted metal fused into the rocks. Whether you believe Michalok had a close encounter with an extraterrestrial craft or some secret military aircraft, there's no denying the dramatic physical evidence left behind. It's an utterly bizarre and fascinating case that continues to defy conventional explanation a half century later, cementing its place as one of the most credible and well-documented UFO incidents in Canadian history. It was just another quiet evening of fishing along the Pascagoula River in Mississippi on October 11, 1973. Charles Hickson, a 42-year-old factory worker, and Calvin Parker, a 19-year-old shipyard worker, had no idea their night was about to take an otherworldly turn. The two friends were casting their lines off a decrepit old river pier around 7 p.m. when they first heard a strange whirring sound above them, like the flutter of a helicopter's blades. Hickson looked up and was stunned to see a brilliant oval-shaped craft hovering only 30 to 40 feet overhead, surrounded by a shimmering blue haze. It was about 30 to 40 feet across and maybe 8 to 10 feet thick, like a big flattened out oval, Hickson vividly recalled years later. It had two brilliant blue lights on each end that kind of blinked on and off. Before the stunned men could process what they were seeing, a blinding beam of light shot out from underneath the craft, bathing them in an eerie blue glow. Suddenly, both Hickson and Parker felt an intense tingling sensation that left their bodies paralyzed and rigid as boards. In the blink of an eye, three bizarre creatures emerged from the hovering craft and seemed to float effortlessly down towards the terrified pair. Hickson and Parker would later describe the entities as around 5 feet tall, with wrinkled elephant-like skin and what appeared to be robotic claw-like hands. They had these big buggy eyes that were right on the front of their faces, Parker recalled. And they had these slit-like mouths that never opened or moved when we heard these sort of thumping robot voices inside our heads. The creatures seemed to communicate through some form of telepathy as Hickson and Parker heard disembodied robotic voices inside their minds, almost like a form of hypnosis. The voices calmly instructed the paralyzed men not to fear, that they meant no harm. In a trance-like state, Hickson and Parker felt themselves being levitated off the ground and pulled towards the bright beam of light emanating from the craft. The next thing they knew, they were inside a clinical, dimly lit room being examined and studied by the otherworldly entities. For around 20 excruciating minutes, the two men lay paralyzed on a cold metallic table as the creature studied them, poking and prodding their bodies with strange instruments. Parker claimed a long cylindrical object was even inserted into his mouth at one point, leaving him choking and gagging. Just as suddenly as it began, the examination ended. Hickson and Parker found themselves transported back to the same muddy riverbank, dazed and terrified, watching as the craft silently zipped away into the night sky at an impossible speed. Shaken to their core, the men raced to report the harrowing incident to local authorities. Despite their frantic state, both Hickson and Parker were able to recount strikingly similar details of their alleged abduction experience to investigators. In the decades since, the Pascagoula incident has become one of the most famous and credible cases of alien abduction ever reported. Both Hickson and Parker passed lie detector tests and maintained consistent accounts of their experience until their deaths. Whether you believe the two men truly encountered extraterrestrial beings that fateful night or not, there's no denying the dramatic impact their story has had on UFO lore. It remains one of the most well-documented and chilling cases of an alleged close encounter of the third kind. While alien encounters have been reported all over the world, certain regions seem to be hotspots for sightings and encounters. One such area is the southwestern United States, particularly the states of New Mexico, Arizona, and Nevada. This region is home to several alleged UFO crash sites, military installations rumored to be involved in extraterrestrial research, and vast stretches of remote desert terrain, perfect for spotting unusual aerial phenomena. Another hotspot is the Hesdalen Valley in Norway, where numerous unexplained lights and objects have been observed and documented since the 1980s. The valley's unique geography and atmospheric conditions have been proposed as potential explanations for the phenomena, but many cases remain unexplained. So whether you're a firm believer in extraterrestrial life or a skeptic seeking rational explanations, the topic of alien encounters is endlessly fascinating. From the tantalizing accounts of close encounters to the ongoing scientific search for life beyond Earth, this subject continues to capture our imagination and push the boundaries of our understanding. So the next time you gaze up at the stars, remember, we might not be alone in this vast cosmic playground after all. If you enjoyed this episode, and I really hope that you did, please follow for more and share it with the ones you like and love, because sharing is caring. Send us your questions on Instagram, Facebook, or via email at hello@themediummatters.com. Head over to themediummatters.com to join our free mailing list, where we talk about upcoming moon cycles, rituals for the seasons, everyday magic, and so much more. Until next time, my beautiful soul, keep your heart open, your mind curious, look up at the sky, and be filled with wonder.